the Inno the Buzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode 91 of the Inno the Buzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Jack Bourne, the founder of Deadline Funnel and the creator of AW Pro Tools. He makes software that helps entrepreneurs maximize their sales through marketing automation. His passion is to make tools that make marketing easy. This was a really fascinating interview where we talked about topics ranging from developing products for a specific need and testing those to focusing on providing an exceptional customer experience right from the beginning. Without further ado, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Jack Bourne of Deadline Funnel.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have with me today on this episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast from St. Augustine in Florida, Jack Bourne, the founder of Deadline Funnel and the creator of AW Pro Tools. Jack makes software that helps entrepreneurs maximize their sales through marketing automation, which is one of my favorite activities. His passion is creating tools that make marketing easier. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Jack. It's a privilege to have you here.
It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to this.
Now, Allegra Sinclair suggested we get you on the podcast. So big hello to Allegra if she's listening. And I'm really looking forward to our chat today. Now, before we get on to marketing funnels and software tools and all that kind of geeky stuff, how did you get into this business? What did you want to do when you were a child?
So what I wanted to do with it as a child probably didn't have a whole lot of connection to what I do now. Most boys, at one point I wanted to be a fireman. At one point I wanted to be a doctor like my dad. And I was studying to be a doctor when I was in college, but for various reasons it just really wasn't for me. I didn't find my life's calling in it. After I graduated, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. But I was exposed to I had a sneak peek, a small window into the life of what it's like to be an entrepreneur. Some of my father's friends were entrepreneurs, and I would do some work for them, and it really intrigued me that my father would go off to work and worked, I think, 5 days a week, sometimes late into the night because he was an OBGYN. Mm-hmm. And so it was just really fascinating to me that there was this whole other way of earning money where you could really call your shots, and if you wanted to take a few days off, you could take a few days off, and it really intrigued me. But I just had no idea, you know, how do you break into that? How do you become an entrepreneur? So for many years after college, I really kind of wandered the wasteland, just trying to, you know, I took odd jobs. I really didn't have a guiding, you know, I didn't have a direction that I was going in, but I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And so really the first thing that I did was I tried my hand in sales, and I had mixed success, but I got a lot of experience. This was direct sales, and so I learned what it's like to get rejection face to face.
Yeah,
that was kind of brutal, but that was my first introduction to sales and marketing. And so, just to speed this up, I mean, because this was a long time ago. So fast forward, and I had worked for Merrill Lynch for a while, and that's really kind of a direct sales type of job. You're getting clients and stuff. I left Merrill Lynch after a few years of doing pretty well at that, but there was a new company that was having success in the Jacksonville, Florida area. It was an exciting startup, and I joined that. But it turned out that me and the boss just really did not get along. And after a year of working there, we had an argument. I left, and I remember calling my wife, and she's like, "Well, what are you going to do now?" I said, "I have no idea, but I'll figure it out." It's the classic, you know, entrepreneur jumping out of the window and building the plane before you hit the concrete. So what I ended up doing was I went and I purchased, I got this idea to create basically an so the company that I worked for, I should explain, was in the business of providing, they would connect what are called travel nurses, these healthcare providers, with hospitals. And so when I left, I thought, well, it seems silly that there isn't any sort of marketplace for this. So I'll create the eBay for these various sort of a job site for these types of workers. And so I didn't know how to build a job site. So what I did was I went and I purchased a book on PHP, a really thick book. And I went through and I had purchased some code, but the code didn't work. And so I went through and I was trying to figure it out. And so I scratched and clawed and got it all working. For a year, I didn't charge anything, and I was just really trying to get it running. I made a whole bunch of mistakes, and this was before people really had systematized and codified the whole idea of here's how you do a product launch. But I ended up doing a bit of a product launch because my wife came to me after a year of this, and she's like, look, I love you, but it's trying to figure out if this is a hobby or if this is the real deal. So I said, yeah, you're right. So what I did was I sent out a series of emails saying, okay, we're starting on this date. We're going to start charging for this service, and you can become a charter member. Here's what that means, and here's the deadline. And so what happened was initially I think one company bought, but other than that, there was crickets, really nothing. And I was freaking out. Oh, my gosh, I'd wasted a year of my life. And so after the time ran out, I said, well, a deadline's a deadline. And so I'm going to hold fast to this. And I started shutting off accounts. And all of a sudden, emails started coming in. The phone started ringing. Hey, why can't we get access? I said, because the deadline passed, and I'm a man of my word. And within the next 5 days, over $28,000 of revenue came in.
Wow.
and that was my first introduction to the power of deadline, and also my first introduction to how much people procrastinate. And so I didn't. That wasn't where Deadline Funnel was born, but that certainly was my first introduction to the power of a deadline, especially when you're marketing. And so that was really my first foray into marketing, and that site really was enough to. I didn't make 28 grand a month, but it was a recurring membership deal, and so that really paid the bills and then some for many years, and it really gave me some breathing room to get much better at programming. I tried my hand at affiliate marketing. I had some affiliates. I created some software. So that was really how I got started in this. But as soon as that money started coming in, I really got the bug and just wanted to keep improving.
So you basically headed off on a path of software development.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it wasn't like, so I didn't continue. I wish that I had seen some of the writing on the wall and said, okay, this is what I'm good at. I should just do software development. But I really dove deep into sales and marketing, especially marketing online, direct response marketing. And for a while, for several years, I actually worked for Perry Marshall, who is known as the guy who really cracked the code on how to advertise on Google.
Yeah.
So I worked as his marketing manager for, I think, 6 years. He's a good friend of mine to this day, but that was a great opportunity to network and get to meet other high-level direct response marketers, and again, to really just become as proficient as possible at sales and marketing and persuasion.
Yeah, that's great. What I like about it, though, is that with the software you developed, though, you showed value initially before getting to that deadline point, right? So I will probably explore that a little bit more in a moment.
Well, if I can just jump in with that, it's that's one of those two-sided markets. It's like an auction place. So you're playing the middle between the suppliers and so the service providers and the people consuming those services. And so it's you have to build up both sides. You have to get that network effect. Because if it's lopsided on one side or the other, then there's not equal value. And so in order to reduce the friction and get it to the point where I could charge for it and there was value, we did have to go through that phase. But as with anything, in hindsight, there's a lot of things that I would have done differently. But that's one of the reasons why I waited so long to launch.
Yeah. And at some point, then you started developing other software, and the first one was the AW Pro Tools for AWeber, right?
Yeah, correct. So the first major what we call SaaS, software as a service, that I developed came about because I was basically I'd been working for Perry Marshall for several years, and I had always told him when I first started working with them, look, I'm an entrepreneur at heart. You're hiring an entrepreneur, and I want to work with you, but understand that in my DNA, I'm an entrepreneur, and so don't be surprised if I start, you know, continue creating some products, etc. Hmm. So for several years, I put my stuff to the side and really focused on his business. But after a while, I just really wanted to get back into it. And so at the time, I remember that AWeber had been around for a long time, but they really hadn't kept up with the times in terms of marketing automation. There were things like Infusionsoft and Entreport had come along, and so there were some other companies that were really starting to make headway in terms of marketing automation as we know it today. And I took a look at AWeber and I thought, huh, I wonder if they have what's called an API, a way to write code that makes their software do stuff that it otherwise couldn't do. In other words, could I add a layer of improvement to AWeber by using their API? It's a way for developers, programmers to tie into an existing system. And so I started to look at it, and I realized, wow, I really could. I think I could make some big improvements and add on some marketing automation that's really, really missing. And so I started to develop that. And when, as I was developing it, I showed it to a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine and really a smart, savvy marketer named Andre Chaperon. I remember we went to an event together called ClickBank Exchange, and it was in New York. And I said, hey, man, I want to show this thing to you. Let me know what you think. And I showed it to him, and he said, holy smokes. He said, I'm going to Mexico in about 3 weeks, and I can either send out the email to promote this when I get back, or I could do it now. And I thought, well, you know, I don't want to pass up an opportunity for Andre to get the word out to his list. So I made the changes that he had recommended, and then he sent it out to his list, and a whole bunch of people signed up. It was a really good fit to his audience because over the years he had been telling people to sign up for AWeber, but we all knew, everyone who used AWeber knew that there were some gaps and some, everyone had these different types of workarounds. And so mine was the first system that really figured out, here's a way to make it act more like Infusionsoft or Entreport or some of these other ActiveCampaign I think had come along at that time. So you didn't have to leave AWeber. If you liked AWeber and you had all of your lists over to AWeber, you didn't have to leave. You just pay me a monthly fee and you could tie this into AWeber, and it would make it much, much more powerful. And so that was how AW Pro Tools was born. And a few years later, I actually sold that off to an investor.
Hmm. Yeah, well, definitely that. I mean, I like the way you found a need and then develop something to fill that need.
Yeah, that's how a lot of my stuff has come along, is that I sell to people who are very similar to me. It doesn't always have to be that way, but I just find it easier because a lot of the best ideas that I've come up with come from a need that I have. And then I really start by developing it internally for myself. And then I start talking with other people and saying, hey, would this, you know, do you have the same problem? Would you be interested in solving this? And if I get a really strong response from a few people, then I get the feeling that I'm onto something, and then develop it further and then roll it out.
Hmm. Yeah, it's amazing how that works, isn't it? I've had that experience a couple of times where people have responded really strongly for something that I showed them that I've developed for my own need, and then, oh, this has legs. There's something in this.
Absolutely, yeah. Hmm.
So how did Deadline Funnels come about then? Obviously, you know, you had that experience you described earlier where you realized that setting deadlines prompted action.
Yeah. So I didn't tie into it at the time. Looking backwards, that was my first really powerful experience with deadlines and the how you really have to get people to stop procrastinating. And deadlines is one of the most powerful ways to do that. But what was going on at the time, again, I was working with Perry Marshall. I had some of my own products that I was promoting, and he, of course, was always promoting his stuff. So he and I are both big proponents of drip emails. In other words, automated sequences of emails where you develop authority and trust, and then you eventually bend your way around to what you're offering. But it's all done through emails rather than just a sales page. And so one of the thoughts that I had was, okay, automated webinars were out, but it didn't seem like we didn't really want to do an automated webinar. We wanted to have these follow-up emails. I wanted to use marketing automation, and I wanted to have a deadline. To me, it just seemed like one of the most powerful. I'm a big student of Cialdini, Robert Cialdini, and he's a big believer in scarcity and urgency as one of the most powerful psychological triggers. I've seen it in stuff that I've done. We've seen it work in product launches and stuff like that. I just, it was frustrating that I couldn't automate it. And so I didn't think, aha, I'll go and create this. Actually, I went and started looking for solutions. And there were definitely little scripts and little free WordPress plugins that you could use to put a countdown timer on a page, but that really wasn't going to cut it in terms of what I wanted to do. Because what I wanted to do was not just put a timer on a page. I wanted it to be, number one, I wanted it to be, just because it's automated, I didn't want it to be fake. I wanted it to be genuine. So I wanted, if it expired, I didn't want it to reset the next day and just be some bogus, sleazy tactic. I wanted it to be genuine, but automated. The other thing is that I wanted the ability to have it fully integrated in the email. Because sometimes the first thing that you have happen when someone goes into a sequence is not an action taken by the prospect or subscriber. You're just applying a tag, or maybe they click a link, but I wanted to be able to trigger things in the background in Infusionsoft or some other email software system and have that set the deadline. And there was definitely nothing that could do that. And really one of the key things was being able to have the deadline be specific to that person, so that no matter what page they went to, if they went from the sales page to the checkout page, the countdown could be the same countdown on both of those pages or multiple pages. And that was just the small number of things on my list that I really, really wanted, but those were some of the big things, and that just didn't exist. And one of the other things was I didn't want to be forced into a certain format, like, okay, you can do it if you use automated webinars, but anything else, you just can't make this happen. I didn't want to be forced to to sell one certain way. And so with all of those criteria, there was nothing that even came close to even doing one of those things. And so I just decided, well, I'll create it, and then I'll see later if other people are really interested in purchasing this. So I developed it internally, and developing software internally is just at least 10 times easier than developing it for the public to use, because someone who shows up and puts in their credit card or they take the free trial, and they have to be able to use it without you sitting there and saying, okay, well, you got to click on this and do this and that. You know, so when you develop it for yourself, you don't need a pretty admin. You don't need something with tutorials. And so it's a lot easier to just create something for yourself. Taking it to that next level is not twice as hard. It's like 10 times as hard. But eventually I started sharing it with other marketers, and people just loved it. It felt like the AW Pro Tools experience I had, where people had been silently begging for this, and it was just as soon as people saw it, it instantly clicked with them, and they understood. They're like, yeah, this is awesome. I can definitely see how to use this. And so that's, you know, if you have a product like that, it's just amazing, because it gives you the opportunity to get feedback from people who see where you're going with it, even though there's some rough edges on what you offer, because it's an early version. And they hopefully stick around long enough while you're developing and taking their feedback. But it's just so great when you have that product to market fit and people are excited and they're enthusiastic. And that's really what I had with both AW Pro Tools and have with Deadline Funnel as well.
I like the specificity to the person. So how does that work? So if somebody lands on a sales page, for example, say, and it makes an offer, that triggers the deadline from there, does it? So it's specific to that person who's
Right. So in your example, you started with someone lands on your sales page. And so let's say that you show up on a Monday and the deadline is automatically set. I'm just going to pick an arbitrary day for Thursday. And so you've been tracked, and now the deadline is going to be over on Thursday. And if you don't take action, you're not going to be able to get back to that sales page. In addition, if we put the deadline funnel code on your checkout page, let's say, you wouldn't be able to get on the checkout page or leave the checkout page open. So whatever pages that you want to just be able to be not accessible after the deadline, it could be multiple. And so that's what I mean. It's specific to the person. It's sort of like your deadline, you're carrying it around with you as you go through the funnel. Even if it's different software platforms across the funnel. So the sales page might be built in, I'll just pick a software, Lead Pages, and the checkout page might be in SandCart, right? And so there's it doesn't matter that it's on two different systems because we're tracking you. So just continuing on with this analogy, if Jane shows up on Tuesday, her deadline wouldn't be the same as yours. Her deadline would be one day later because she showed up one day later. And so her deadline would be Friday. And what's really powerful about this is that you can do this. So first of all, it's automated. That's one of the most powerful things. But the other thing is that, as I mentioned briefly before, someone doesn't have to visit the sales page. You could be, let's say that you're on my list, and you recently finished going through a free training course, and then my system had a rule that said, okay, wait 3 days, don't do anything, and then apply a tag or a trigger in the subscriber's account. And that trigger tells Deadline Funnel, my software, hey, this person's deadline is going to be in 4 days. And then from that point on, the emails that go out are synchronized with the deadline. Even if you've never clicked anything, you've never visited the page, you've never interacted. If you're out of town, let's say that you're out of town and you come back after the whole email series has gone through, and then you open up your email inbox because you've just been out of your inbox for the entire vacation, let's say. You see that, hey, there was this really cool offer, but it looks like it ended last week. Well, when you click on the link in the email to go and see, check it out, hey, maybe I can still get in. Sure enough, it's going to send you to the, sorry, this is no longer offered deal. So it's really, really powerful to be able to take what we normally do in a live promotion and to automate it so that as people go through your system, you can send people into, you can use all your other marketing automation rules that you would, and sequences that you do in your CRM or your email software to get people in front of the best match offer that, based on their interest or what they clicked or what they watched, and then automate the deadline at the end, because studies have shown over and over and over again that one of the most powerful psychological triggers is having a deadline. And so our software makes it possible to automate that so that you don't have to be doing that all the time. Also, you don't have to be babysitting the promotion. If it's a live promotion, you don't have to be babysitting it at midnight or 3 a.m. to, you know, turn everything off. So it just really frees you up to leverage that marketing automation and maximize your sales and conversions as much as possible.
That sounds like a really powerful piece of software. What kind of results do you see from that? What improvements in conversion?
So we have a whole lot of case studies on our blog. Some people have 2x improvements in sales. Some people have more. One of the case studies that I love the best. I like to tone things down rather than saying you're going to make 500% more. You know, I like to tone things down. So there's a great guy, an early client of ours named Nick Stevenson, and so we took an interview that I did with him and turned that into a case study, and he got a 37% increase in sales. Now, as I mentioned, some people have gotten much higher increases, but again, I like to tone it down because, you know, 37%. Is nothing to sneeze at. A 37% increase in conversion where you have no additional cost of advertising, you're doing the same thing. You have the same funnel. And his funnel was, he was doing everything right before he added Deadline Funnel in. He was doing basically what I'll call the poor man's version, or sort of the duct tape version of doing rolling evergreen launches. So every 2 weeks, he would change all his web pages, change all of his emails, queue everything up, and basically do a 5-day sequence that ended with a deadline. And so he was getting a really good result with that. But he knew in the back of his mind, you know, I think that people are probably going cold waiting for the next time that this thing opens, because they opt in, and if, depending on when they sign up, yeah, they watch a few free videos, but then they're waiting, and there's nothing for them to buy until I get around to doing the next promotion. And so when he added in Deadline Funnel, his sales went up 37%, and he was doing a lot less work. So that's one of my favorite case studies for some reason. I think it's a realistic number, and it's a number that I think anyone should be excited about. But some people are getting much, much higher results.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like he was, as you say, cobbled together a process that was similar, but Deadline Funnel made it much easier for him to do and more or less automated the whole thing.
Sure, and it added in some other features that I think really juiced up his results further. So, for example, one feature that a lot of people love, I think almost everyone uses this, is the ability to put an animated countdown in the email. And so what's really cool is that with our system, again, it's based on the person. So if you have 1 day and 22 hours left until the deadline, and you open up an email, you're going to see the countdown coming down, 1 hour and 22. You click through, and you're going to see on the sales page, 1 hour and 22. You click through to the checkout page, you see 1 day and 22. I forget what number I did, but the point is that the countdown is the same.
It's the same on each system.
Yeah, on each system. Yep.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's very powerful because that shows that it's genuine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it is. And one of the things that I really try to hammer home is that I think the days are gone where you can really build a sustainable business on just one product. And so if you're going to have multiple different products you're going to sell, you're going to have that relationship with your past clients to make it easier for you to continue to sell the second and third and fourth product. And so everything that we do in our business is either building our credibility or it's hurting our credibility. And so when you use our software, if someone for 1 second thinks that it's not genuine, they'll learn real fast that, oh, the deadline was in fact the deadline. And then the next time that you offer something, they're going to be much more, they're not going to wait around, they're going to jump in. Whereas if you go the opposite route and you have one of those cheapy countdown timer scripts that's just specific to the page and it resets the next day, It's gonna hurt your credibility. It's gonna have an effect over time. So it's just gonna make it harder for you to build a business. And so, you know, our clients understand that it's important to invest in your business and treat it like a serious business, so that you're not just a one-hit wonder. It's not just about this week's promotion. It's about, yes, this promotion, but what's next and what's next and what's next? Because you want to have a relationship with your clients. The hardest thing is to get that first client. So you want to do the best that you can to serve these people, to develop trust, and to not do anything that's going to hurt that trust, so that when you have other things to offer, it's going to be so much easier for them to decide, yeah, this is what I want to do, because Jack's stuff is good and he's always truthful and I can trust what he says and I'm going to buy this.
Yeah, that's good advice. Now, I imagine there's a lot of moving parts to this because it integrates with email providers, with the auto CRM systems and a whole lot of different ones. And then there's the whole idea of what's your strategy for setting a deadline, because I guess just using the software itself is not really going to get you much results unless you know how to put together the campaign. So what kind of onboarding and training do you provide for customers to get them started?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So one of the things that we have is, as soon as someone signs up for our 14-day free trial, there's a page with a video from me, and it's a real short video that you would think that I'm going to say, you know, here, let me show you how to use the software. But actually what I say is, before you log into the software, want to invite you to do a free 15-minute onboarding call with my team. It's not a disguised sales call. It's just an opportunity for us to make sure that you don't have, so that we can answer whatever questions that you have and help you map out your strategy if that's what you want, or help you get comfortable with the software. Like, whatever you need, that's what the 15-minute onboarding call is for, and it's completely free. And it truly is not a disguised sales call. It's just an onboarding call with my team members and sometimes with me, just to help them out. And that's been really, really powerful to help people to get up and running. The other thing that we do, we have invested a lot of time and energy into providing stellar support, including a knowledge base that includes not just videos, short videos, that's key, short videos, and also the text version, so that people can get the answers that they want quickly. But also, a big thing that's a really big investment, and I'll admit, I've said this many times, when my team brought it up to me, hey, let's do live chat, internally, a part of me felt like it was dying, because I thought, oh my gosh, like live chat, I don't want to do live chat. Live chat for sales? Sure, that sounds great. But we really made a commitment. I said, look, let's commit to this for 30 days and let's just see how it goes. I'm going to go all in. I'm going to get in on chat. Anthony, you know, my whole team just really jumped in and focused on providing a great experience on chat. And it was, I would say it was 95% answering support questions. So there wasn't a whole lot of closing sales on the live chat. But what it did for our members, our clients, is that, especially our new ones, is that it gave them quick answers to the questions that they have. And what I started to realize, because in my own experience, there's lots of software companies out there that have a live chat, but you go and you type it in and you either wait for an hour or it'll say, hey, we're not here. Like after you've typed it in, it'll say, hey, we're not here. We'll get back to you in 6 to 12 hours. And that's always frustrating to me. So people had a really good experience by getting the answers that they needed right away. And it also gave us a feedback loop to know what sort of questions and things our clients were struggling with most, so that we could also create that documentation. And so it wasn't one of those things where Monday we started doing a live chat and by Friday we just saw tremendous growth. But it's sort of like working out or eating right. Over time, it has a cumulative effect. And the more we did it, the more we grew, and we started getting a lot more word of mouth. People were talking about what an extraordinary job we were doing with customer support, and just people had an all-around great experience because, you know, whether they were having an easy time with the software or a tough time, they could go on chat and get their answer solved right away. It was within like 5 minutes, sometimes less than a minute. They could be chatting with us. And that was just a real, real big differentiator for us. And it's something that we invest a lot of time in, you know, to this day.
Yeah. I see you're using Drift also on the live chat as the live chat software. How do you find that? Because I'm using that. And one of the things I haven't quite worked out to get right is the notification, so that, as you say, you can have that quick response.
Yeah, so we like it. As with anything, it's not perfect. There are some features that they've taken away. That one feature in particular they took away that I really wish they hadn't. But all in all, we're very happy with them. The way that we're so on top of it is that we have it tied up with Slack. And so we use Slack for our internal team communications, like a lot of people do. And so we have it where it pings us in Slack when we get that little notification. And so what we used to do is we used to just answer it via Slack, and you can certainly do that. But for some reason, the Drift software would always keep, every now and then it would have either a really slow connection. So there was this lag time between when they typed something and when we saw it, and then when we typed something when they saw it. Not all the time, but it was enough that eventually we all switched over to using it in the web browser. And so what we would do is we would get the notification, the ping, the audible ping that, hey, this is someone is responding or someone is starting a new conversation. we would get that ping in Slack, but then we would actually go to the Drift admin and reply on the website, because it was there's virtually no lag time there.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I've set mine up. But what tends to happen is that when the team's not online, that's when most of the requests come in, and then you don't see them later on, unless you actually go in and look.
Well, we set, I think you can set the messages so that if it's before hours or after hours.
Yeah, we have that. But I mean, in terms of then coming back and responding first thing when you're back on, that's where I'm still, I need to work out the process anyway. Right. So you talked about the knowledge base and short video. So what's the theory behind that? Because I really like how you're doing that.
Yeah, so again, it just comes from my own experience of what do I like, what do I hate, and also talking to other people. And so one of the things that's frustrating for me when I'm using someone else's software or trying to learn someone else's program is when someone does a webinar and then they take that 45-minute or hour and a half webinar and they upload it to YouTube or Wistia, and that's the main training documentation. You're supposed to be able to scroll through that. And some people do a better job than that, and they'll make their videos 15 minutes. But I find that 15 minutes is still too long. I think that you should break down the videos as short as possible. And then ideally, the videos, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but it's an investment. It's an asset once you have it. So I don't think that you should have a knowledge base that's just video. I think that a lot of people, if they're in a rush, they want to see the text and the pictures and some arrows pointing to things so that they, if that's all they need, boom, they read it, they're out, and they're gone. Now, if they read through it and they realize, okay, this is the I'm in the right place, but this is a little bit complicated, so I would like to watch a 5-minute video on how to integrate with Infusionsoft, let's say, then the video is right there in the knowledge base. And they can watch the video and get more information and have it more spoon-fed to them, and they can watch over my shoulder or over my team's shoulder as it's done in front of them. So that's my theory of how people like to consume help documentation.
Yeah, that's great advice. I like that a lot. Everyone has different preferences for how they communicate. So some people are visual, some people are more auditory, and other people like reading things. So it's good that you're addressing all of that. And as you say, I mean, I find myself a lot probably liking to look at screenshots and step-by-step guide, but then a video is always good if I think this is a bit complicated. I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it is a lot of work. And if what I would say is, this is what I'm talking to is where I think anyone who's got software should want to get to. But when you're first starting out, you might have a smaller team. You may not have the resources to do that. And so if you are just starting out, it's fine to do either longer videos or to do a webinar and break it up into chunks. Try to explain to people, if it's a longer video, here's what we cover in this video. Maybe there's some bullet points so that people know what's in the video, so they don't have to watch the whole thing and realize, okay, that wasn't it. I need to watch the next video. So when you're first starting out, you just need to get it done. You don't have to get it perfect, but one of the things that I've found with software is that you're never done. There's always something that can be improved. There's lots of things that can be improved. In fact, there's more things to be improved. I mean, even after years of doing this, we have a never-ending conveyor belt of things that we're improving this here. Someone said that this was confusing over here. We've updated the admin, and so now we need to go through and update our documentation. I now have one of my team members going through and checking our documentation for quality control, seeing what's outdated, what's inaccurate, what could be improved, et cetera. And so it's just constantly going through and improving it again and again and again. And so there's really no end in sight. There's no point where you get to where you do your documentation and it's okay, you're done. There's nothing else to say. Because if you're continuing to develop the product and add features and streamline and improve the user interface and make and if you're dedicated to making the user's experience as good as possible, there's always, always, always areas where you can improve. And every time that you improve the software, you can improve the documentation. And sometimes the documentation becomes outdated because you improve the software.
That's right, yeah. And also getting feedback from your customers, which I'm sure you're doing. I know I'm involved and I had these folks on the podcast a little while ago, Paperform. Their process is very similar to what you've just described. They do a really good job. And it's funny you talked about the pop-up chat on the website. They have the pop-up chat on the website, and that's the main way I communicate with them. If I have a question about how to do something, I'll pop it in there and they'll come back to me fairly quickly. And they constantly are evolving that product. And as they evolve the product and add new features, they then add to the documentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my experience, no matter whether someone's auditory, visual, kinesthetic, pretty much everyone wants to just give me the answer. Like, it shouldn't be hard. So if the chat's there, they actually want it. They want to use it and they want to talk to a human being. It's sort of, I have this frustration when I call the bank or God knows, the cable company. Press 1 for English, press 1 through 6 if you're doing this. And I've always just thought, you know, if they actually just had human beings answering the phone, they probably could just really quickly say, oh, hi, how can we help you? Okay, shuffling you directly to that department.
Yeah, right, that's right.
You know, rather than sending someone through that automated wasteland. So that's just the philosophy that we take. And people really, really respond to it. And one of the things that's really helped us, so anyone out there who's doing this, but they haven't seen the results yet, one of the things I would say is because it's so rare, there are some companies who do it, and there's certainly some companies who probably do it better than us, but we're really trying to do the best that we can to give real quick response times on the chat. So it blows people away. You know, it's almost guaranteed that people are going to say, your support rocks, thank you so much, something positive. And when they do, my team, and I always do this, but my team also is told to respond with, I'm glad that you love the support. If you ever get the opportunity to tell others about us, would you please do that? And it's if you think about the way that that's phrased, it's really laid back, because I've given you an out. I've said, if you ever have the opportunity, it's not, hey, can you go and post in Facebook right now?
Yeah,
that's a little too much. But if we just put it out there as, hey, glad that you liked it. So this is in the context of you guys are awesome. And so we say, you know, if you ever have the opportunity, would you please tell other people about us, because it would mean a lot to us. And we get lots of people saying yes, and then or I already have and I will again. And so we get a lot of word of mouth just from so we don't just wait for people to think of it on their own. Yeah, you know what, I should tell other people about Dublin Funnel. If they're having that positive experience, while they're having that positive experience, we just put out that simple request that doesn't make anyone feel like they're being pressured for referrals. We're just saying, hey, we're so glad that we're able to help you out today. And if you're able to tell others, that would be great.
That's great advice. I really like that. I'll probably steal that one because I'm working at the moment on a system for systemizing the referral process. So that's a really good one.
Yeah, it's worked well for us.
And I understand what you're saying about ringing up and getting these automated systems. I think there's quite a few times where I've been in that situation and I kind of scream at the phone and say, just give me somebody to talk to.
Operator.
Yeah.
Right. I know what you mean.
All right. This has been fabulous, Jack. I really appreciate all the insights you've given us into Deadline Funnel. Sorry, I'm getting slipping into the wrong one. Deadline
good,
Funnel.
So you're good software too, sure, yeah.
That's right, but it's different. It's a different thing. And we'll post links to that so people can actually have a look at these things in action as Jack's described them. And also there's some wonderful testimonials there. There's both video testimonials and short testimonials that people can read about customer experiences with Deadline Funnel. So I think it's time we moved on to the buzz now, though. That's our innovation round designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions and hopefully you'll have some really good answers for us that will inspire people to do something awesome.
Okay.
So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
So in my opinion, what works for me to be more innovative is actually to spend more time out of the office, specifically exercising. What I find is that if I'm really stuck on something, if I've been thinking about it for a significant period of time and I'm just not getting anywhere, it's time to give the conscious mind a break and to let it be resolved by the subconscious mind. And so I don't run as much anymore, but I will go play tennis. That's one of my favorite things to do. So I'll go play tennis. Sometimes I run a little bit or go surfing. And so I find that when I'm doing some other activity that's not business related, if I've been really trying to solve some sort of business puzzle, it'll almost always get unlocked while I'm exercising.
That's fabulous advice, and I can totally relate to that. I'm a keen cyclist. I just come off a lengthy cold, so I haven't been cycling in the cold weather here in Australia in the southeast. But on the weekend, I went out for the first time in about 4 weeks, and I had this epiphany about something I'm working on at work, and it was like, you know, just somebody turned a switch, and all of a sudden, this thing just became clear. Totally clear in my mind, and we're going to start working on that initiative right now. So I can really relate to that. I think it's great advice. So just totally switch off, focus on something else, and the unconscious mind actually goes to work and processes things that you've been ruminating over and puzzling over consciously for a while.
It works for me.
All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Is to have a journal. And so I'm a big believer in giving ideas a cooling off period. So that's one of the reasons why I'm a big believer in the journal. Now the journaling that I do is a paper and ink journal, but I don't know if I've always been this way, but it seems like the past several years I've just had idea after idea after idea. Now that sounds wonderful, right? But the problem is that some of those ideas are rubbish. And when you have these ideas, they all seem brilliant. And so I'm a big believer in writing them down in a journal for two reasons. One, as I just mentioned, so you can have a cooling off period, and that you can get a little bit of distance between when you have the idea and time to evaluate the idea. So just write it down so that you won't forget what it is, that you understand, so that it's just enough so that when you come back to it later, you won't wonder what the heck did I write down. I don't even understand this, but just enough to be able to jog your memory, and then move on. The second reason why I really find that to be productive is because it seems like if you don't write it down, you're either going to forget the idea. And it might be one of the brilliant ones that you didn't want to forget. But also, it seems the way that my mind works, but I've spoken with other people, and it works for them as well, is that if you take that idea and you write it down, that seems to make room for the next idea to come along. And so it just works to journal. And back to the cooling off period, I can't tell you how many times I've gone back and looked at ideas and I thought, that's one of the stupidest ideas I've ever had. But I know at the time that when I wrote it down, I thought, this is good. This is some good stuff. And so you really need to give yourself some distance so that you can evaluate your ideas with fresh eyes.
That's great advice. I really like that. And I like, why do you choose to do it with pen and paper as opposed to something on the computer?
For me, it's something about the tactile experience. I'll try to make this story short. One of my first ventures into the software business, I I lost $26,000 because I was making a whole bunch of stupid mistakes. And I woke up one day, tabulated, like, how much, like, I'm nowhere close to having this thing ready to launch. How much money have I spent on this thing? Because I've been outsourcing it to this team. So where am I? Because I'm not even halfway done. And the number was 26 grand. And I realized, okay, although I certainly could spend more, I've got to call it quits. I got to hit the pause button. So at that point, I decided, okay, it's time for me to not start any new ventures. I need to figure out where I went wrong and to really backtrack and see what the problem was, because I don't want to do this. I do want to innovate. I do want to bring stuff out to the world, but I don't – spending 26 grand and not even having the first version to show for it just didn't feel right. So that's when I started journaling, and I really solved a lot of issues, a lot of faulty wiring in my head about things that I believed and why I wasn't bringing the product to market that had to do with just emotional stuff. So I fell in love with the whole idea of journaling, and just from there, I've never been a huge fan of taking notes in Evernote or anything like that, unless you're at a conference or something. But when it comes to either things that I feel like I need to solve in my mind, it's sort of like a trip to the psychiatrist's office without having to leave. So you just, you know, you journal daily or at least weekly. Yeah. And so writing down ideas just seemed to be, the journal just seemed to be the right place to do it.
Yeah. Okay. That's great advice. What's your favorite tool or system for improving productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
So I've got some favorite tools that we use on the team. Two of them, I would say, are Slack and Trello. Trello is a simple. We pay for it, but there's a free version of the tool, which just makes it real easy to manage your team and to manage the different tasks that you're going to do. It works on the concept of a Kanban board, Kanban, and it just makes it real simple for you, for a team to get organized and to prioritize what needs to be done first, second, and third.
Yeah, well, and we'll post links to those in the show notes. I mean, most people, I think, in my audience will be familiar with them because they have been referred to a lot. Slack is great for a remote team, which I'm guessing your team is a remote team. They're not all in one office.
I'll mention one more, and that is that I don't do this every single time, but sometimes if we get a complex question, because the way that our software works, some people are fortunate enough to have just questions about, hey, I can't log in. How do I reset my password? Ours is fairly complex. People are setting up. Everyone's got their own different funnel, and they're trying to fit our software into the mix. And so some people have some pretty complex questions. And so to type all that out in a response sometimes is very time-consuming. So what I'll do is I'll open up my favorite audio recorder, which is called Amadeus Pro for Mac. But it really doesn't matter which one, but that happens to be a really good one. I don't hear enough people talking about Amadeus Pro. And so I'll record a two-minute or three-minute audio, I'll record as long as I need to answer the question, and then I'll attach the audio file and hit, you know, reply, and I'll say, hey, I recorded an audio for you, give it a listen and let me know if this helped. And people are just blown away. Wow, the founder of the software company sent an audio and replied to my question personally. But what did it take? It took 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's good advice too. I tend to do that quite a bit with video. But yeah, audio is a good way to do it as well. And like you say, it's a lot quicker than typing something out or.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm a fast typer.
That's right. All right. What's the best way to keep a project or client on track?
Yeah, I'd have to go back to what I talked about before. My favorite tool is Trello. I've tried a lot of other project management tools, but we just keep coming back to Trello. It's just simple. It does what it's supposed to do, and that's it. I like Trello.
Okay. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Number one thing you can do to differentiate yourself. I'd say in one word, ship, with a P on the end. just, you know, make sure that you're putting yourself out there and that your people have an opportunity to get a dose of you. You know, we're all unique human beings, and so just by putting yourself out there as the face of your company or the face of your department, or one of the faces of your company, whether it's YouTube videos or in a podcast or in a book or in a white paper, get your thoughts, get your personality out there, because just by doing that, that now it's not just a software product, it's not just a training product, info product, a training course. It's they get a real flavor for the person or and the people behind it. And so I would use those different types of media to get yourself out there and to ship. Don't be afraid of putting yourself out there. It's always scary the first time you do it. I'm working with someone right now who's putting together her first training course. I don't usually do that, but I really believe in her mission, and so I'm helping her put this together. And one of the things that she's really had to get over is the sound of her voice and seeing her on video. And I said, look, we all have to do it. There's no shortcut around it. I don't know anyone who from day one loves the sound of their voice.
That's right. Well, there are a few people out there, but they're in the vast minority. We won't go there. That's great advice. And it reminds me, I was doing a summary of some of my early podcasts, where, you know, I've been asking these five questions since the beginning, and I thought it'd be a good idea to pull out the answers of the five questions for a bunch of folks and put together episodes that just had that in it and compare what people have said. And you reminded me very much of exactly what Dori Clark said in her interview. She said almost the same thing. You've got to get out there and ship. I think she might have even used the same words. And there's this great video, it's a TED talk, I think, of Seth Godin talking about exactly the same thing. So great advice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been absolutely fabulous, Jack. Where can people reach out and say thank you?
Well, they could come to our website, dublinfunnel.com, and hit us up on chat. We're also on Twitter, where we have a Facebook page. So we're very easy to find that way. And if anyone has a question about our software, you can certainly post to us on chat, or you can send us an email at help@dublinfunnel.com, and that will get to us as well. Just let them know that you want your message to go to me, and they'll make sure that it gets to my inbox.
That's great. And we'll post all those links on the show notes for the episode. And certainly I've got the Deadline Funnel website open there now, and I can see, you know, there's three folks there, including Allegra, on the chat. So I'm sure if I post something in there, I'd get a quick response.
Absolutely.
All right. So what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field?
I would say be humble and get out there and network and try to learn from other people. One of the things I learned early on is that there's not really truly anything absolutely 100% new. It's recombining existing ideas from other people, other industries, into unique new combinations. And so I think one of the most powerful things that you can do is to mix and mingle mastermind with other people in your same industry and also different industries, so that you can cross-pollinate. And if we go back to what we discussed about the subconscious mind, these ideas will take root and you'll come up with something innovative and new.
Mm, that's great advice. And I'm experiencing that all the time as well, and I see other people experiencing that. So definitely great advice. All right. Finally then, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
My buddy Andre Chaperon, because he's just a brilliant guy. He's a amazing human being and wicked smart at marketing, but also because he's shy, and so I love I would love for him to be forced to to get on yet another podcast and have to come out of his shell.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that, Andre. Look out for an invitation from us, courtesy of Jack Bourne.
All right. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah, it has been fun. Thanks so much for sharing your time and insights with us today, Jack. I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed this immensely, learned a lot, and I might actually, as a result, give Deadline Funnels a spin because I do have a couple of things that I'm doing right now where I think it would be a perfect fit. So I wish you all the best for the future of Deadline Funnel and for all the things that you're doing, and let's keep in touch.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Jack as much as I enjoyed interviewing him. There are some really valuable lessons in this interview about how to develop products that meet a specific need, about targeting a particular audience, and about building trust and relationships through providing an exceptional user experience. All the great ideas and tips that Jack shared with us can be found at innovabiz.com.au/Jack Bourne. That is JACKBORN. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au/Jack Bourne. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Jack there. We'd love you to leave comments on the post to tell us what you got out of this episode and what actions you'll take as a result. Jack suggested Andre Chaperon, author of Autoresponder Madness, Story Fluence, and The 1% Club, for me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Andre, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Jack Bourne from Deadline Funnel. Make sure you subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Cast so you'll never miss a future episode. While you're there, please leave a review and let us know how we are doing. If there's anything you'd like us to cover, questions you want answered on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, or guests you'd like us to interview, please send those ideas to us. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.